Rob Ainsley. In 1997, I cycled my first Land's End to John O'Groats. This podcast, which I recorded in 2020, tells the story of the trip. The whole end-to-end covered 1,167 miles in 3 weeks. There's no standard route for the end-to-end, so I chose mine to take me past my home, which was then in Bath, and up the east side of England to visit my parents outside Hull. I did it on a second-hand 1980s Raleigh Record Ace, bought for £200 from a shop in Bristol. I stayed in hostels and B&Bs, and throughout the trip I tried to eat and drink as locally as I could. You'll hear several other voices in this podcast, all computer-generated by the text-to-speech website ttsmp3.com.
I am the voice of Brian. I speak all the important stuff, such as complaints, announcements, and jokes.
I am the voice of Emma. I speak all the reviews of the food and drink. They're not simple ratings, but something rather more sideways and random. You'll see what I mean as we go along. To be honest, I didn't understand a lot of them myself.
Neither did I.
You'll also hear a lot of synthesized music, which I arranged and prepared using Myriad Software's Melody Assistant program with the Gold Sound Bass. There's also a few bits of me playing classical guitar and some snippets of proper music played by proper musicians too. You can read the blog of the trip and find a full list of credits and more detail about everything here at lejog1997.blogspot.com. That's lejog1997.blogspot.com. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Day zero. Bath to Penzance.
We are now entering Cornwall.
The 1557 from Bath crossed the Tamar at Plymouth. I couldn't see any murals welcoming me to the Free Republic of Cornwall, but I could see a lot of hills. Some of them weren't quite how I expected. The spoil heaps from the old clay workings round St Austell looked more like Mount Fuji, conical and bleached white, as if sketched by the great Hokusai in his experimental early woodblock series, 36 Views of Cornish Mining Spoil Heaps. I wondered what Austell was the patron saint of. Fly tippers, perhaps? Or hazardous waste? We eventually got to Penzance, the most terminal feeling of railway terminuses. It felt a very long way even from my West Country home. I'd thought we were nearly there when we passed through the remote-sounding Liskard. That had been an hour and a half ago. My second-hand, vintage, metallic green Raleigh Record Ace had shared the guard's van as far as Exeter, with a pile of boxes full of chicks.
That's typical. Everything about you says cheap.
I'd talked to other cyclists who'd done the end-to-end, and the ones who'd enjoyed it most hadn't pounded for 100 miles a day on A roads to do it in a week. They'd taken their time, and had had some sort of theme for their trip. One had visited cathedral cities en route, another football grounds. Someone else had eaten and drunk and stayed only at pubs called the Red Lion. The food and drink angle was what interested me. This, I decided, would be the aspect of Britain I'd focus on over the coming 3 weeks. Yes, 3 weeks, I was going to take my time too. Wherever possible, I'd try to eat only locally sourced food and try out any local specialities en route. Cheddar, Bath buns, Yorkshire pudding, deep-fried Mars bars. And of course, local beers. I'm a great believer in researching things first-hand and not just looking things up on the internet. My total food miles for the journey would, I hoped, be less than my total bike miles, helping me to save the planet single-handed. My local food project didn't get off to a good start in Penzance tonight, though. After checking into the hostel, I wandered the centre, but nowhere was open, not even the chip shops. A pub was offering Cornish curry, which I didn't fancy. It sounded too much like a euphemism for something. The convenience store didn't help. Their fish came from Hull, like me, and the pasties had just come down from Bath, also like me. It was proving harder to get away from national distribution networks than I'd hoped. At least I had success in finding local beer. The pub I chose for my last pints as a non-end-to-ender was the Sir Humphrey Davy, named after the local boy made good. His contribution to chemistry was enormous. He discovered or isolated several important elements, and he devised the miner's safety lamp, which combined two convenient features of powerful illumination and not causing explosions. Davy was also a supporter of women's rights and a fan of recreational drugs. Clearly a man ahead of his time. Calcium and strontium, potassium and sodium, invention of the safety lamp that never would explode him. Magnesium and barium and iodine and boron, Sir Humphrey liked to party and was certainly no moron. Even with the benefits of the Davy lamp, those old mines were terrible places. Dark and cramped, noisy and dangerous, and full of desperate men with no other prospects. All things which came to mind as I entered the pub.
Will the owner of the Rally Recordings bicycle, frame number F17705-3829, please move it, as it is causing an obstruction. Thank you.
There were stern posters warning against underage drinking and drug dealing, which was appropriate because Humphrey Davy was a trailblazer here too. He discovered the intoxicating effects of nitrous oxide and gave it the nickname Laughing Gas. After a hard day in the lab, you're entitled to relax a bit.
My beer for the evening came from St Austell Ales, brewed in the town whose spoil heaps I'd admired earlier. I tried a 4X mild. This was a bit like alcoholic Coke. Thin, fizzy, bit sweet, with a treacly aftertaste.
Lamp rating, dim and distant.
However, my next choice, top-of-the-range bitter Hicks, was smooth, warm-tasting, slippery and sweet. Touch watery, but hoppy enough.
Lamp rating, 4 candles.
Not the perfect start to my culinary trip, but it would do. I ambled back to my hostel happy, and even the snorers didn't stop me enjoying a long, deep sleep. Tomorrow, we'd get down to business. I've never had much of a head for business.
Day 1. Land's End to Perranporth.
The sunblocker I bought for this trip is working wonders. I put it on this morning at the Penzance Hostel as I set off, and immediately it clouded over, started to rain, and continued all day. I cycled through 10 miles of deep puddles to get to Land's End for the ceremonial start of my trip. There's a visitor centre at the end of the peninsula, though it's a bit cheesy, to be honest.
Cheese rating, quick save budget cheddar.
I had a quick look round the end-to-end museum, but really, I just wanted to take a souvenir snap by the signpost and get going. The sooner I started, the sooner I'd be completely soaked. But it felt very exciting, setting off to cycle the length of Britain. A major undertaking, and all I'd done to set it up was just take 3 weeks off work and get the train here. I hadn't had to apply for anything or do any training or fitness work, or research, or route planning. I did have a road atlas with me though, and I decided that I'd tear out pages as I went to save weight. At St Just, I stopped for breakfast at Warren's, a bakery recommended by my guidebook. I bought a saffron tea treat for 90p. This proved to be a squidgy bun the size of a pillow, crammed with raisins rather than saffron. It was a genuine local speciality though, as the middle-aged lady in the shop confirmed, with tales of it as a childhood sports day treat. The only sport possible today would have been kayaking along the A3071. I had my saffron tea treat at the roadside, and it was just as well I hadn't gone for soup. In this rain, I'd never have finished it.
As I was going to St. Ives, I met a man with 7 wives. He has since pleaded guilty to 6 charges of bigamy and 2,744 of cruelty to animals.
By the time I got to St. Ives, I was wet through. I stopped for a coffee at a 1970s throwback pub in the harbour. They kindly lent me a towel to dry off a bit, but I only ended up making the towel as wet as I was. With the drizzle showing no signs of abating, I developed a sudden interest in modern art and spent 2 hours in the Tate, because it wasn't raining in there. I stroked my chin, nodded sagely at the Bridget Rileys and the wonderfully melancholic music of Gavin Bryars. It was still raining outside, so I took a guided tour. At one point, I commented approvingly on a piece of white minimalist metal sculpture, only to be informed by the guide that it was a radiator. After people had finished laughing, he explained that it was also meant to be a work of art, so the joke was on them.
I knew that, actually, of course.
After St Ives, it was a long, wet afternoon of following the north coast through thick mist and fog. At St Agnes, I thought I might have a chance of getting local fish for tea, but the man told me it all came from Iceland. I still don't know if he meant the shop or the country. I dripped my way into Perranporth and looked forward to drying out at the hostel. But first I wanted to eat, and eat local, according to the demands of my trip. I tried another fish shop, but they said it all came via London. They weren't sure where it had come from before that, but they thought it was probably a sea of some kind. I had more luck in the convenience store. I found some St Ives ham.
Ham rating, Kenneth Williams.
And a Cornish pasty from Bodmin.
Bodmin rating, beastly.
And I got myself some chips, which I was assured came from local potatoes. In a spa, I saw some strawberries from Helston, clotted cream from Redruth, bread from Plymouth, and mushrooms from somewhere in Cornwall. So that was breakfast sorted for tomorrow. At the hostel, though, I wasn't happy to find that the central heating had been turned off for the summer. It didn't feel like summer. There was no drying room, the dorms were freezing cold, and I was wet through. I took refuge in a pub on the harbour, the Seiner's Arms. A seine is a fishing net, I learned from the historical notes displayed on the wall, along with several fishing terms new to me.
Cure.
Lookout man.
Cowl roos.
Cast nets.
Jousters.
Fish hawkers. Must be interesting to play Scrabble with a Cornish sailor. The pub itself was a beef-eater steakhouse-style joint with piped music and nautical decor, all ship's wheels and copper kettles, built on the site of an old pilchard curing cellar. Right now, I was hoping for a cure of my own, for hypothermia. I self-medicated with a pint of Trelawney's Pride, sweet and a bit watery, but with some lightly oaky body, thanks to the wooden cask.
Net rating. Fowler shoots. He scores.
A wet and only partially successful first day. But I was up and running. Well, shuffling, maybe.
Miles today, 57. Miles since Land's End, 47. Day 2. Perranporth to Camelford.
I towelled myself off after my morning shower. Then, thanks to the hostel's lack of a drying room and heating, I immediately got soaking wet again, putting on my sodden clothes from yesterday. My self-catering, locally sourced breakfast in the hostel kitchen was very satisfying, though. Grilled mushrooms on toast first, dark and rich and delicious, like beef stock. Then, as I suspected my later picnicking opportunities in this weather might be limited, strawberries and cream. The local farm strawberries were sweet, small and juicy, not those big white apple-sized ones with no taste, and the Cornish clotted cream was fabulous, full fat, full flavour, and so thick you could stand a spoon in it. In fact, I spent several minutes amusing myself doing just that.
Mushroom rating, magic.
I set out. While not the torrential rain of yesterday, it was still grey, drizzly and pretty miserable. From Crantock to Newquay, a tiny ferry was supposed to cross the estuary in summer. Despite being June, it evidently wasn't summery enough yet. I couldn't see a boat anywhere. There was a small wooden bridge further up, but it wasn't easy to get to. I had to carry my bike and luggage down to the riverside and squidge across mud and sand to get there. On the other side, as an angler cheerily informed me, there were 169 steps back up to the top of the cliff.
You'll have to carry your bike up the steps. There are 169 of them. Ha, 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 ha.
My elevenses was a Cornish pasty, somewhere round Newquay, my first locally made one, rather than a plastic-wrapped Ginster's. This one had pound coin-sized chunks of succulent swede and potato, and shreds of tenderised peppery meat that were pretty tasty.
Cornish rating, Poldark with his top off.
The filling contained a few flecks of something, like damp bits of cotton wool. Some of them had streaks of colour. One of them appeared to have the Ordnance Survey map symbol for a church with a tower. Another, a disused lighthouse. Then I realised why. My Ordnance Survey Land Ranger 203, Land's End and the Isles of Scilly, had been at the bottom of my pannier. A non-waterproof pannier, which had been rained on all through yesterday. I'd now have to navigate to Padstow using a ball of papier-mâché, most of which had found its way into the pasty. I think I've had enough of Cornish pasties now. I don't need to go down a mine to have a half-meat, half-jam thing just so I can say I've done it authentically. I got to Padstow, and it started to rain again. I sat out a two-hour deluge over lunch in a pub, intent on having some local fish, something Padstow's been famous for ever since Rick Stein opened a restaurant here in 1975. But first, something much more important. It was sunny in Birmingham, where England were, unusually, in charge against Australia in the Ashes Test. We'd hustled them out for 118 yesterday, and now Nasser Hussain and Graham Thorpe were running riot with the bat. I watched it all on the pub telly with a pint, along with some miserable Aussies. First, their surfing at Newquay had been stymied by the weather, and now they had to endure this. I felt very sorry for them, actually. No local beer this time. The lowest alcohol mile score was, I reckoned, for the Wadworth 6X, and that came from Wiltshire. But I had some very tasty pan-fried cod, caught round the corner at Trevoux's Head, and a baked potato, which I was assured had never owned a passport.
Catch rating, one-handed blinder at second slip.
Eventually the rain eased up, having apparently moved to the West Midlands, where it stopped play instead. I got back on the bike and headed along the Camel Trail, one of Britain's most picturesque cycle paths, running alongside the estuary to Wadebridge. I followed the trail inland, through damp riverside woods to Blissland, and found a place to snack on the regional cheeses that I'd bought at Rick Stein's Deli in Padstow. I liked the Yarg, which I'd assumed was one of those weirdly named Cornish saints like Blazy or Ive or Rostel, but it was actually the family name of the makers, Grey, backwards. Good job they weren't called Ezra.
Backwards rating.
Anyway, the Yarg was gorgeous, mellow and soft and rich, not crumbly, though I wasn't sure I could taste the promised grass and honey. I contrasted it with green goat's cheese, which was not goaty or acrid, but pleasantly like soft white clay, which seemed appropriate for the area's mining history.
Goat rating, nanny state.
I rode across the remote-feeling Bodmin Moor and got to Camelford. With the cold, wet debacle of yesterday's hostel in mind, I got myself a nice, warm, dry B&B and settled down to enjoy the cricket highlights on telly. Like the remaining Cornish cheese that I had for my supper, Ashes Revenge is a dish best served cold.
Miles today, 58. Miles since Land's End, 105. Day 3. Camelford to Barnstaple.
At last, a day without rain, and with a euphoric tailwind. The local element to the B&B breakfast was homemade red currant jelly and jam, a delicious rhubarb, ginger and pineapple, though I wasn't sure all those ingredients had necessarily come from the garden. Camelford had been in the news for a chemical spill in the water that had turned people's hair green. It was affecting me too. Looking in the mirror, I could see mine had started to change from chestnut to grey. I wasted 5 miles into a headwind on the Camelford Cycling Museum, which turned out to be shut on Saturdays. Back in the right easterly direction, though, I sped along little up-and-down roads with a breeze firmly behind me. Heading north, the coast appeared over a moortop like a sunrise, and I blasted down into Bude at 40 miles an hour.
Warning. Safe limit exceeded. The tie breaks now. Warning. Safe limit exceeded.
I found a launderette and gave my sodden kit half an hour in a tumble dryer. Now, enjoying for the first time on the trip both sunshine and dry clothes, I had Bude Canal towpath all to myself for a couple of miles. At last, the signs were good. Not the road signs, though, which misled me time and again, until I came upon one that's something of a landmark called the Red Post, with that southwest rarity, correct distances and directions.
At the junction, turn left. After 100 metres, get off your bike and take the bus instead.
I made quick progress along an A road to Holsworthy. In the centre, I had a slap-up picnic lunch of good local stuff, thanks to the regionally aware sourcing of an unprepossessing village store in Widemouth Bay. The Devon ham was even better than yesterday's Cornish ham. In Japan, they feed their cows beer to give Kobe beef its tender texture. I wondered if the pigs here trained on cider.
Ham rating, Laurence Olivier.
I also had very juicy, fruity local vine tomatoes, crab from the bay dressed in its shell, sweet and tasty. Local strawberries that were also delicious, the remains of yesterday's Yarg cheese, some local bread and a can of Cornish lager from Redruth. It said 1793 on the front, which I hope was the name, not the sell-by date.
Lager rating, party like it's 1793.
I was feeling really good, at last, about this trip. I was happy. The afternoon was tough, with steep ups and downs through Black Torrington, but I eventually got to the Tarka Trail, a welcome flat path along an old railway line that wasn't too muddy considering the last 2 days' rain.
Why is it called the Tarka Trail? Because if you cycle fast enough, you'll be a little otter.
I coasted easily along at 15 miles an hour, listening to the Test match on the radio in my bar bag, feeling good, especially as England was still on top of the Aussies. Church bells welcomed me to Weir Gifford, and I admired the panoramas on the bridges over the Tor and the Torridge. More fast, level, sunny riding got me through Bidford, Instow, and finally to Barnstaple. Today, everything had gone well. Even the timing of my puncture was good, just as I was wheeling my bike up the drive of my B&B. Had it come on top of a rainy moor yesterday, I wouldn't have been as laid back about it as I was now. I couldn't find a local food option for dinner in town. The nearest I could get was a homemade chilli sauce in a kebab shop, so, reluctantly, I went for that.
Kebab rating, woof woof.
However, local beer was no problem. On the quayside, down by the wharf, I was in a mood to do some thorough research. First was Jolly Boat Brewery's Bidford Plunder. Plummy body, sweet, a little bit thin, but richly flavoured enough.
Plunder rating, bit of cash, bracelet and a video.
Next was Exmoor Stag. It wasn't very nice at all. Literally bottom of the barrel stuff.
Stag rating, put the poor thing out of its misery. Shoot it immediately.
The beer was acerbic, sugary and immature. It also had a strange fragrance, which all brought back unpleasant memories of a short-term girlfriend back in 1979. I would have complained, but I was watching the cricket highlights on the pub telly, which was clearly more important.
Miles today, 78. Miles since Land's End, 183. Day 4, Barnstaple to Taunton.
I've clearly upset the weather gods in some past life. This is turning into a very wet trip. I fixed my puncture from yesterday evening in the B&B porch, and then it was back into the heavy rain. There followed a long day of wet slogging up and down tedious hills. I was still following the new National Cycle Network Route 3, which included yesterday's Tarka Trail. NCN3 is essentially a collection of signposts along quiet roads. Quiet, apart from the cursing of sodden end-to-end cyclists climbing yet another pointless hill. I had the Sustrans map of the route, which included blank spaces for collecting stamps at various points on the way, like youth hostelers used to do in the olden days. My experience at Bratton Fleming this morning, though, wasn't encouraging. The grumpy admin person just scribbled in the slot with a biro.
We don't have a stamp. I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not.
I couldn't read what he'd written at all. Maybe it said,
Please stop dripping on our carpet and go away. Thank you.
Or maybe I should have taken it to the chemist and claimed it was a prescription for foot cream. The rain did hold off now and then. When the sun poked through, it was magnificent, with views over glistening, verdant hills and valleys and the narrow thread of tarmac sneaking its way over wild moorland as if trying not to be spotted. At Bampton, adhering to my plan of having only local food, I had a Devon cream tea at the White Horse Tea Rooms. They actually had a stamp too, though my map was now so wet that the rubber block just went straight through the paper. My map had now separated into waterlogged squares and was shredding into pieces like flocked milk. I laid them out on the cafe's stove. They soon dried out into crisp, warped shapes that could have been maquettes for a 21st century parliament building. The cream tea itself was excellent. For a bargain £1.75, I enjoyed super fresh home-baked scones. Doughy, moist, medium light and not too sweet. The jam was perky but a little tart. And there was also, of course, lashings of delicious local cream, so naturally thick I could have grouted my bathroom tiles with it.
White Horse rating, die schönen weißen Lipizzaner Pferde.
From here to Taunton, the weather was mixed. In the sunny intervals, I could see the rolling hills of Devon and Somerset far into the distance. In the downpours, I could just about see to the end of my bar bag. By the time I got to Taunton, it had just about stopped raining. I made my way to the stamping station for my map, only to find it hadn't been built yet. But I discovered, with a guilty smile of revenge, that I'd inadvertently stolen Bratton Fleming's biro. So I calligraphed my own stamp with it instead. Taunton on a Sunday night offered few local gourmet options. The best I could find was corner shop chicken sandwiches, made in Bishop's Lydiard.
Bishop rating, same colour square as the pawns. That's bad, actually.
Life can be so unbalanced. The day had been too wet, and the sandwiches were too dry.
Miles today, 66. Miles since Land's End, 249. Day 5, Taunton to Bath.
Today, although I was only about a quarter of the way to John O'Groats, I was going home, because today I was heading for Bath, where I lived. So, instead of a strange, uncomfortable bed in a damp and dingy hostel, I could look forward to my own, familiar, uncomfortable bed in a damp and dingy shared house. From Taunton to Bridgewater, NCN3 takes the canal. The towpath is decorated with a scale model of the solar system, and the surface quality certainly is out of this world. Like Mars, for example, with bits of rubble and stones. At one point, mindful of my trip's theme of locally sourced food, I stopped at a farm's honesty table to stock up on fresh fruit and veg. I'd like to think that touring cyclists are the most honest of customers, partly through the moral rectitude of the self-sufficient, but also because you're unlikely to make a successful getaway on a bike with a hotel TV. If anything, we're more likely to leave things rather than take them. I've absent-mindedly set down a trail of travel towels and electric adapters in hostels and bed and breakfasts right across Europe. I picked myself some nice carrots, tomatoes and lettuce. No invasive species like tree frogs or black widow spiders here. Any wildlife hiding in the leaves would be proper native species. The Somerset Levels came as a welcome surprise after the psychotic ups and downs of Cornwall and Devon. I could almost have been in the Fens, except for the hills poking up in the distance, like a distant Kilimanjaro, or perhaps just a nearby Glastonbury Tor. At Moorlinch, I admired the green postbox set into the wall of the friendly village shop, where I bought more vital supplies, such as wine. The owner kept painting it green. She told me that the post office keep repainting it red and giving her polite but firm warnings about the potential criminal nature of unapproved colour schemes.
Please do not interfere with the post box this time. This is against post office regulations. Thank you.
Then As soon as they'd gone, she'd paint it green again. Glastonbury Tor loomed and receded. If Jesus of Nazareth had visited here, as the legend suggests, he'd surely have been welcomed. They'd just think he was an amiable hippie down from Bristol. Parry's stirring music for William Blake's poetic account of the visit had been echoing through my head for the last few days. In fact, it was taking over. Whatever piece of music I started thinking of, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, or Mars from the Planets, or the gallery music from Vision On, it always turned into Jerusalem. Getting home to my CD collection tonight would put my brain right. I got to Wells and had lunch by the cathedral. I'd picked up three local Cheez-Its from a deli in town. Wedmore, gentle, interesting and grew on you, which sounded like one or two of my friends on the editorial team in Bath. Ford Farm Cheddar, rich and fun but a little bit in your face, like one or two of my friends on the ad sales team in Bath. And Ticklemore, a Mendip goat cheese with a silly name and a slightly disappointing chalky flavour. Or so I thought. But along with my honesty table salad and a three-seeded loaf from a local baker's, I was well fed and happy. The sun was out, I was loving the cycling, and I was close to home.
Cheese rating, way to go.
I had to push up the hill to Priddy, but the views of Ebor Gorge were spectacular, and I got some sweeping panoramas of the Mendips and of Glastonbury Tor. I glided past the reservoir at Chew Magna, busy with day trippers, and got back home to Bath in good time for dinner. My shared cottage, in the village of North End, just behind Salisbury Hill of Peter Gabriel fame, had the convenience of an always open, honesty-based farm shop next door. With my housemate, Jerry, we picked some big potatoes for baking, to go with the rest of my cheese. The goats, which had been bland and gypsum-like earlier in the day, seemed to have matured in my panniers, and was now pungent and delicious. Jerry was impressed.
Yummy, this cheese is nice. It's not chalky like you said. In fact, it's like chalk and cheese. Ha 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 ha.
We washed it down with a bottle of Somerset white wine, Moorlinch, which I'd bought from the shop with a green postbox. It was excellent. Crisp, light but with body, and with hints of apple and celery.
Postman rating. Pat feels he's a really happy man.
It had been a good day.
Miles today, 70. Miles since Land's End, 319. Day 6, Bath.
I had a rest day at home today. It gave me the chance to replace my bike's back tyre. This was long overdue. It was second hand when I bought it a year ago, and since then it had been from London to Athens, and then, even worse, from Newbury to Bath, which probably wore it out more, because that was the Kennet-Navan Canal towpath. I wasn't quite sure if today counted as part of my end-to-end. I shuttled around town and saw friends on my mountain bike rather than my tourer, but I ate only local food and drink. My Bath-sourced lunch consisted of very nice shop-bought sausages from the sausage shop, which was called the Sausage Shop. They were Porky and Herbie, which sounds like a naff 60s double act.
Banger rating, 1965 Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow.
I also had a Bath bun for my mid-afternoon snack. This is a milk-based sweet bread roll with sugar and currants on top, like a brioche. Jane Austen was wary of them, and once jokingly wrote in a letter to a friend,
"I will endeavour to make the difference less by disordering my stomach with Bath buns."
But then she wasn't all that keen on Bath either.
Transitional literary realism rating, nonsense and nonsensibility.
I hadn't had any scrumpy so far in the West Country. To my surprise, I couldn't immediately find any artisan cider in Bath, and had to make do with a couple of cans of Gamers, which had been synthesised in Bristol.
Wurzel rating,
It had been convenient having a day at home, but I couldn't wait to get back on the bike and back into action again. Unfortunately, if the forecast was to be believed, neither could the rain clouds.
Miles today, 12.
miles since Land's End, 319. The same as yesterday, obviously. Day 7, Bath to Stow-on-the-Wold.
After a rest day at home, I could push on, literally, up the steep and narrow lane that led out from my shared house through the village and up into the lush green Somerset Hills. Gradually, my fretting about this and that, this being an unevenly seated rear tyre and that being a ticking chain, gave way to the joy of rural cycling solitude on a lovely summer's day. I followed the Foss Way, the old Roman road, towards Lincoln.
I don't understand. How can it be long and winding if it's a Roman road?
I think it's a joke.
Oh.
Sometimes it was a road, sometimes a lane, sometimes a farm track, and sometimes a reconstruction of the Somme. I got a thrill from thinking that this was exactly what a 3rd-century cyclist would have experienced. Eventually, though, it got too muddy for a touring bike. I'd have needed something beefier, such as a mountain bike or, ideally, a tank. And I took parallel roads to Malmesbury for lunch. I chatted to some fellow end-to-enders. One old boy was in his 70s and doing it in 7 days, compared to my 20. Maybe when I get to 70, I'll be able to do the same. Following my trip theme, I had a local speciality for lunch, Wiltshire lardy cake. It was the perfect pick-me-up for a glucose-deficient cyclist. Sugary, moist, squadgy and, well, lardy.
Lard rating, everything else rendered obsolete.
I cycled past a Romany fortune teller sitting outside her caravan with a sign offering readings. She looked at my panniers, smiled at me and said,
"You're going on a long journey."
She must have the gift. So far on the trip, I'd suffered from a condition where every piece of music I played in my head turned into Jerusalem. To try and cure me of this annoying affliction, I bought myself a Sony Walkman yesterday to supply music for the rest of my trip using my Barbag sound system. It was now playing The Lark Ascending, because I was rolling through back lanes to Down Ampney, the childhood home of one of my favourite composers, Ralph Vaughan Williams. It wasn't open to visitors, but was a vivid illustration of the sort of Englishness that his music exemplifies, a honey-coloured Cotswold stone large house, covered in flowers and set in a lush English country garden. Happy with this insight into the young Ralph's formative influences, I put on his 5th symphony, rural and mystic, to go with a sunny country hillscape. Had I known what the weather was going to be like later on, I'd have brought Sinfonia Antarctica with me as well. I went past Cotswold Water Park, full of jet skiers and people talking loudly about their sales figures, to the pretty village of Bybury. It was nearly 4, but I had plenty of daylight left, so I waited for Yankovsky's Brasserie to open. I'd been recommended their grilled trout, continuing my trip's food theme. So I put Schubert's Trout Quintet on my Walkman. It was delicious, pink and tender and tasting of fresh, clear brooks. And it certainly was local, caught from the stream right here.
Trout rating, high up the scale.
I sipped a couple of beers in the bright sun. Oak Hill, a Somerset stout with a solid, smooth, easy drinking taste, and composed some jokes for my classical music-themed Christmas crackers.
How do we know Schubert's beer capacity was less than a gallon? Because he left his 8th unfinished.
The next track on my tape was Vivaldi's 4 Seasons, so clearly I'd have to find myself a pizza tonight. Anyway, I sat writing postcards until 6, when it started throwing it down with rain again. I aquaplaned for an hour and a half along lovely but very wet lanes, and then along the horrible A429 to Stow-on-the-Wold. Cold, wet and tired, I found the hostel with some relief in the fine Cotswold stone square. The warden told me to put my bike in the passage of the pub next door. The bar staff were having none of it, though.
Your bike is dripping wet, and so are you. Off.
I went back to the warden. She told me to try again.
He's talking rubbish. Ignore him. The owner specifically told me that it's okay for hostelers to park their bikes in the passage. Go back and try again.
So I did as she said.
Well, I am the owner of the pub. The hostel warden can off. Take your bike and
it up your cyclists. You can all go.
I decided that, on balance, I'd find another pub to drink in tonight.
Miles today, 62. Miles since Land's End, 381. Day 8, Stow-on-the-Wold, to Leicester.
It was another drizzly morning. I cycled round Stow's handsome square, watching the town come to life, and hoped the miserable landlord of the pub next door had had an awful night's sleep. I carried on heading northeast towards Lincoln, parallel to the A road the Fossway now was, along a great little back road that gave me splendid elevated views of the Cotswolds all to myself. I went past some lovely villages, with cute ponds, greens and cottages, any one of which could have graced a picture postcard. Musically, the good news was that my new Barbag Hi-Fi, a Walkman and some cheap speakers, seemed to have cured me of the condition where any piece of music I thought of turned into Jerusalem. The bad news was that I now couldn't avoid Paranoid Android by Radiohead. Two or three times an hour, I'd hear snatches of it on the radio, coming from a house, building site or overtaking car. I had nothing against the song, I liked it very much, but edgy 21st century alternative rock didn't feel an entirely suitable soundtrack to my ride as I arrived in Stratford, home of Shakespeare. The great dramatist and poet was clearly a cyclist, because he often mentioned bikes in his plays.
Lights, more lights.
Timon of Athens, Act 1, Scene 2.
A merry heart goes all the day, your sad tires in a mile.
A Winter's Tale. Act 4, Scene 3.
Look you what hacks are on his helmet.
Troilus and Cressida, Act 1, Scene 2.
Thou hast worn out thy pump.
Romeo and Juliet, Act 2, Scene 4. Stratford was disappointing. A mixture of gaudily wrapped old and bland new. Though it had once been a centre of brewing as well as glove making, there seemed no local beer now either. Flowers, a name I vaguely remembered, had moved out years ago. So I didn't have a pint of their stuff, despite its Shakespeare logo.
Shakespearean disappointment rating, oh no, Burnham Wood's coming to Dunsinane.
I had a look round Anne Hathaway's cottage and the Shakespeare Birthplace Museum. It was amusing to see how few facts we actually have about the great writer's life. Everything was presumed, guessed or conjectured by people who either weren't there or who heard it from someone else. It was like trying to find out, the morning after, what I'd done at student parties the night before. Indeed, some people even claim that Shakespeare's plays were not written by him at all, but by another man of that name. I enjoyed a fine picnic by the canal basin, grabbing a bit of rare sunshine, though my lunch's locally sourced credentials were as questionable as claims in a typical Shakespeare biography. I headed east to rejoin the Fossway, now the busy and unpleasant B4455, an A road in all but name and road surface. Needing a water refill, I stopped in a village to ask if somebody could top it up for me. I had no luck at the first house, though.
No.
Or the second.
Can't you read? The sign says no visitors. I don't care what you're selling.
The third did give me some water, wordlessly and with glaring suspicion, locking the door while I waited and slamming it emphatically when I left. Perhaps they've had a spate of con artists disguised as cycle tourists, inveigling their way into houses to burgle them of their pumps, inner tubes and puncture repair outfits. I stopped at a lay-by to swig my hard-won water, hoping it hadn't been adulterated by the donor. A lorry driver parked there had clearly been taken surprise by this silent cyclist and looked at me guiltily. Put it this way, it wasn't a road atlas he was reading. So far, I wasn't getting a cosy feeling about the Cotswolds. The Fossway quietened down into lanes and tracks. I fixed another puncture just as the way got pleasant and rural, turning into bridle ways and a rail trail through woods into the Leicester suburbs. I found a cheap, tatty, but friendly hotel in town. It was full of computer salesmen talking in, I assumed, Gujarati, spiced, amusingly for non-speakers, with English technical terms.
Na, a website Kumar browser hai man kaam nahi kare.
A question. Did my traditional food theme include curry, given Leicester's vibrant subcontinental culture? I thought about it long and hard for about 2 seconds and decided it did. Any local variant of the spelling of Jalfrezi would be enough. I was in luck. The curry house nearby did me an excellent chicken Jalfrezi, fiery and fruity and direct, complemented by crisp poppadoms and a pint of lager that may not necessarily have been stored in locally coopered casks.
Well, I'm not sure how that's spelt. I'll go and ask the chef.
The Cotswolds have been a tad sniffy and suspicious, but I found Leicester friendly and a great place to get proper British food, however you spell it.
Miles today, 75. Miles since Land's End, 456. Day 9, Leicester to Lincoln.
It was Friday the 13th. But it was the best day of the trip so far. Half-decent weather, which was 50% more decency than hitherto, some world-beating local food and drink experiences, and a rude place name. I enjoyed my best traditional English breakfast. The kitchen staff clearly knew their onions and their bacon and mushrooms, and it was nice to be served by locals who'd lived there for generations. So warm thanks to the Patels, Miss Kumar and Mr. Desai. My bike needed some attention, and Leicester's bike park workshop came up trumps for this particular joker, opening at 8 a.m. and fixing my dodgily seated rear tyre and stiff chain quickly and with a smile. They also gave me a free water bottle, which, handily for my ride's theme, came preloaded with genuinely locally sourced Leicester water. Happy and re-energised, I soon made it to Melton Mowbray, a key location for my local speciality theme. Being from Yorkshire, I'm a fan of the pork pie. I was once nearly refused entry to the US because I had one in my backpack.
Next tonight here, a frightening scene inside JFK Airport here in New York. Passengers running for cover, armed officers then sweeping through the terminal. And this evening, authorities
the immigration officials took a lot of convincing that this was a delicacy and not some ancient ceramic artifact that I'd looted from a Middle Eastern museum.
One of the world's largest airports, triggering chaos overnight.
Well, Melton Mowbray is the pork pie capital of the world. And the Rolls-Royce of the genre is made by Dickinson and Morris in its city centre emporium, the Oldie Porky Pie Shoppy. I mentioned to the staff that I was riding the end-to-end, sampling the best of local food en route. Word got to the PR-savvy manager, and within minutes I was being interviewed for the local paper by a friendly scribbler and photographed by a laconic snapper. I got a free pork pie out of it, but even better was to come. The journo had some suggestions of more local places I should visit for my food project. A gourmet cheese shop for some genuine Stilton, which originates here. An artisan bakery for the local speciality, Melton Hunt Cake.
And the old brewery pub in Summerby, which makes the world's strongest beer. Actually, it's a bit out of your way, and you probably wouldn't be interested. No, just forget I ever said it.
I had a few misgivings about all of this. It was only lunchtime, and I wouldn't want to risk too much cheese on an empty stomach. So I bought some for later, and cycled briskly off to the pub. Barry Parrish, the landlord and world record brewer, was impressed by the concept of my trip and offered me a free pint of his global chart-topping brew, Baz's Bonce Blower. Mindful of its barley wine strength, 12%, I hesitated. A pint was surely too much, so instead I had two halves. Now, postcard writing can be a time-consuming activity, and I could hardly abuse Mr. Parrish's generosity, so I tried a couple of his other beers before resuming my trip. My tasting notes, as far as I can read the writing, are as follows. Special bitter. Light, hoppy, fresh, clean, a good snacking beer.
Local newspaper headline rating. Body found in cemetery.
Poachers. Complex, dark, rich, smooth but not ponderous.
Local newspaper headline rating. Man held over fire.
Baz's Bonce Blower. A Christmas pudding of a beer that you could hide silver threepences in. Rich, dark, sweet and heavy. Tastes of raisins and fruit jam.
Local newspaper headline rating. Porn film scandal. Council leader to act.
I headed up to Lincoln with a song in my heart and a lot of alcohol in my head. I did a double take and then a triple take at a signpost that appeared to point to a name that would certainly be pulled up by AOL's obscenity filter. No, it wasn't a trick of the light ale. Someone had clearly been at work with a screwdriver, rearranging the letters from several place names to make a few of them mildly bawdy. Before it had had some letter S's substituted, this one originally pointed to Pickwell, I eventually realised. It was still only just past 1 o'clock. My picnic lunch was pork pie, cheese and that tasty Leicestershire water, with a grand view of rolling countryside and creatively vandalised finger posts. The Melton Hunt cake was like Christmas pudding, perhaps I was still thinking of the Bonce Blower. It was rich, oily and made me feel a little bit sick.
Hunt, rating, Gwarn.
The Stilton, though, was lovely. Moist but firm, like a strong custard slice. Liberated fungal tastes, deliciously pungent. Posh, attractive. You could put this alongside Joanna Lumley.
Hunt, rating, Gareth.
Finally, the Dickinson and Morris pork pie was, of course, superb. Chunky, succulent pork with a spicy aftertaste, luscious pastry and silky gelatin. Suave, assured, world-beating.
Hunt, rating, James.
A succession of quiet minor roads and a narrow wooden footbridge across a ford swollen by recent rains got me to handsome Lincoln. And a good day got better. Unlike the other hostels so far, this one had a room for clothes to dry out. I needed to dry out too, in all senses. I didn't fancy the town's raucous Friday night pubs, so I had a quiet, happy evening, feeling good about my trip and about life, and thanking my lucky stars, most of which were orbiting my head.
Miles today, 72. Miles since Land's End, 528. Day 10, Lincoln to North Ferriby.
I explored Lincoln in the morning, hunting and gathering for local specialities for later picnic purposes. There were plenty of regionally sourced items on offer. Lincolnshire sausages, Lincolnshire hazelnut, Lincolnshire plum bread, Lincolnshire cheese. Perhaps there's little else to do round here but make things to eat. I looked around the fine cathedral and the quaint cobbled steep hill, which is, indeed, surprisingly steep for a supposedly ironing board flat counter. Then I headed out north, not up the old Roman road of Ermine Street, aka the A15, which was busy and unpleasant even on this Saturday morning. I took the parallel hilltop lane, which gave me grand views over the plains to the horizon to my left. It was dull, cold and damp, but at least it didn't actually rain. Much. I had Schubert's Die Schöne Müllerin playing on my Barbag stereo, the gloomy story of a traveller's doomed love affair with a young woman who works at a mill. As ever with Schubert, it all ends badly for the wanderer. I hoped this wasn't a sign. My bicycle bell happened to be pitched in A, the same key as the work's opening song, so I amused myself by reimagining the singer not as a journeyman tenor, but as a cyclist. I stopped for lunch in Curtin Lindsay, a rather drab and run-down feeling place with a shabby little square. I bought a copy of The Independent. It happened to have a travel feature on Hull, the city I was born in. It had a few mistakes and misconceptions. Clearly, the writer didn't know Hull very well. Then I realised I'd written it. It was time for my picnic lunch. Hazelnut is a sort of Lincolnshire haggis, a meatloaf made of pork offal, whose name comes from the Old French for entrails. It was like Spam. I liked it.
Mill rating, Tucking.
The plum bread confirmed my suspicion that all these regional speciality delicacy bread cakes, Bath buns, Dundee cakes, Melton Hunt cake, all those, are all in fact essentially the same thing. A bread roll with too many raisins. This one was doughy, moist and sweet, but sweet, moist dough is not my idea of a wholesome lunch.
Mill rating, Run of the...
The Easter Dawn goat's cheese was good, though. Brick-sized and of a similar heft, and with a back-of-the-throat pungency.
Mill rating, John Stewart.
Appropriately, considering the music I'd been playing, Curtin Lindsay had a windmill. I clambered up to the top to enjoy the view of the surrounding farmland, arterial roads and electricity pylons. This was probably the highest altitude I reached all day. The mill was fun to visit, fully operational and grinding its own flour, some of which I bought to take to Mum's tonight. Its cafe also had excellent Lincoln and York coffee and homemade walnut cake, and I was very much enjoying my trip to local food shtick.
Sorry, mate. I didn't see you.
I was born and brought up in North Ferriby, in the East Riding of Yorkshire, on the north bank of the Humber. It looks across the waters to South Ferriby, in Lincolnshire, on the other side. In the 1960s and 1970s, Lincolnshire was a mystical, far-off land that I'd see every day. It was only a mile away, but on a different planet. We'd never been there. It was 60 miles by road.
And now, from Norwich.
For never explained reasons of transmitter locations and terrain, our regional ITV was not Yorkshire, but Anglia. We had news of bank raids in Skegness, adverts for car showrooms in King's Lynn, and furniture warehouses in Diss, football matches and quiz shows from Norwich. It was all very strange. Anyway, I cycled past a village fete in South Ferriby, in a cold, bleak playing field, just as it was packing up. I stopped to snaffle a homemade cake and engaged some cycle tourists en route to Beverley in conversation. I found it sweet, but rather uninteresting. The conversation, that is, not the cake, which was fine. Passing the Rugby cement works that had been the backdrop to my childhood, I rode over the Humber Bridge, opened in 1981 and still the longest bridge in the world you can cycle across. By tea time, I was back in my teenage home with my mum and dad and sitting at a table creaking with food and drink. Actually, it creaked without the food and drink. They really should get that table seen to. Mum rustled up my Lincolnshire sausages, which were excellent. Plump, full-flavoured, rounded, perhaps a little bit oversaged, but juicy and fatty and shrank properly on grilling and delicious.
Bridge rating, Golden Gate.
In keeping with the local produce theme, I enjoyed a session with my dad of his homemade wine, made from brambles from the field right at the back.
Bridge rating, Tacoma Narrows.
Making your own wine is easy, straightforward and inexpensive. To anyone thinking of taking up the activity, here's a useful tip. Don't.
Miles today, 48. Miles since Land's End, 576.
Day 11, North Ferriby.
Today was a rest day at my parents' house, somewhere around the halfway point of the trip. No pedalling today, but plenty of local eating. I went for a morning swim with my dad, and felt stiffer after 20 minutes in the pool than I had after 10 days of cycling. At least, the next time I went to an interview for a job that I wouldn't get, I now knew how to answer the question,
"What lengths will you go to in order to succeed?"
I could say, about 8 or 9. And then I'm knackered. We also went to his club and daily hangout, the British Legion. It was never my sort of place. My attitudes to matters such as men in earrings, women in positions of power, or carbonated beer in metal casks were quite different from that of most members. Whereas, in an election, I would vote for the left-of-centre candidate with the most progressive and realistic social policies, they would vote for the man with the smartest jacket and tie.
Young people today spend too much time fighting and going on marches. We should bring back national service. That would stop them fighting and going on marches.
There was, however, one thing we could all agree on and all approve of. Thanks to a misspent childhood, I always enjoyed playing a frame or two of snooker with my dad at the Legion.
For those of you watching in black and white, the green is next to the pink.
And this afternoon, I played out of my skin, reeling off breaks of 20 and 30, and trying to look like I did this sort of thing all the time. Not very successfully. The main attraction of today, though, celebrating my trip's theme of traditional local food, was a proper Sunday roast, Yorkshire pudding and all. My request to Mum at first was to make it as traditional as possible, like the dinners of her childhood. However, she suggested that wartime rations, carrot scones, powdered egg and outside loos was authenticity we could do without. She also pointed out that in her day, she'd have been lucky to get any meat at all, as her dad and then grandad had first dibs on it. and I enjoyed my best meal of the trip so far. Yorkshire pudding and onion gravy was the starter, just how Mum used to have it. Creamy batter, crisp but not brittle on the outside, soft and gooey inside. Proper gravy made from the meat. All delicious, thick, glowing flavours.
Snooker rating. Silky cut on the brown.
The main course was roast beef, roast potatoes and veg. Dad had sourced the local high welfare beef through his butchers, and it was tender, full of dark, deep flavours. The potatoes came from our local farm shop, roasted perfectly in the beef fat, caramelised and sweet. Peas, carrots, cauliflower and broccoli substituted the more accurate swede.
Snooker rating, long straight black and screw back for the easy red.
Pudding was strawberries and cream. As a teenager, my mum would have had Yorkshire pudding again for afters, with treacle this time. But we had the modern luxury of small and sweet fresh local strawberries from the farm shop again, and cream from the county.
Snooker rating, doubled red into the middle, set up on the pink.
As for drinks, well, Mum's lot, of course, would simply have had a jug of water. In the pampered late 20th century, we had the pick of the world's wines, offering excellent quality at very affordable prices, right there on our local supermarket shelves. But instead, we had Dad's homemade.
Snooker rating, in off the green, foul, and a miss.
Miles today, 0. Miles since Land's End, 576. The same as yesterday, obviously.
Oh dear.
Where's the cue ball going? That's the end of this frame.